Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of February 2020. Extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. And your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
David Baldwin.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Big Push for Hospice, Coronavirus Testing Pod Set Up at RHCH, and Care to Remain at Almshouses. And we'll go over to Daphne for the first headline, please.
The first headline is Big Push for Hospice. A call to arms has been made for a final push to make the vision for a £3.7 million hospice in Winchester a reality. Work began on Winchester Hospice in January, but a further £500,000 is needed, so Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust and the Winchester Hospice fundraising charity can pay for the entire build. The project to convert the historic Burrell House building at Royal Hampshire County Hospital into a much-needed 10-bed hospice and palliative care hub, providing specialist care for patients, was given the go-ahead in February last year. Nick Vaughan, chair of the Fundraising Charities Board of Trustees, said, "The trustees of the charity have been overwhelmed by the level of support we have received to date, which has been truly inspiring. But opening the doors of Burrell House does not end the journey. Financially, we are not quite there yet. We still have over £500,000 to raise to cover the building and equipment costs. And our remit insists that we will continue to support the hospice as it becomes a beacon of hope to those in need of its services and facilities. The hospice will be there to care for patients with long-term conditions or who are at the end of their lives. The work will see the hospice provide inpatient care for up to 10 patients at a time, as well as a host of outpatient and community services. Dr. Lara Alloway, Chief Medical Officer and Palliative Care Consultant at the Hospital Trust, said, "Our dream for Winchester Hospice is over a decade old, and many of us have been dreaming about a hospice for the people of Winchester and the surrounding villages for much longer, and actually it's becoming an increasing issue. A hospice can support people to stay as well as possible, so as people live longer, we anticipate the need for hospice care or palliative care services to grow and grow." Dr. Alloway highlighted that there is a gap in hospice care in Winchester, with the nearest facilities currently in Andover, Southampton and Basingstoke. "So actually," she said, "people who would benefit from hospice services, that might be a short stay or a day case, coming along to the day treatment centre, actually have to travel a long way to receive these services. And we know that people often choose not to travel because Winchester Hospital is very central," she continued. "Often what we find is people who would really benefit from hospice care choose to stay in Winchester Hospital. We know we could provide much better care. The environment is not as good as we know it could be. It is hoped that the hospice will be open February next year."
This is about the coronavirus testing pod. A priority assessment pod has been set up to assess potential cases of coronavirus at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The area has been set up after NHS England ordered every hospital in the UK to create separate facilities to examine patients they believe to have the infectious disease. NHS services across Winchester and the surrounding are well prepared to deal with new outbreaks, according to a statement by Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust. A trust spokesperson said, "Following national guidance, all hospitals are putting in place NHS 111 pods at their emergency departments. so that anyone attending hospital with symptoms of the virus can be kept isolated from other patients and avoid causing unnecessary pressure in emergency departments. Over the coming weeks, many more of us may need to self-isolate at home for a period to reduce this virus's spread. Everyone can continue to play their part by taking simple steps, such as washing hands to prevent the spread of infection, and calling NHS 111 first before going to the doctors or emergency departments if they have any concerns about or show symptoms of coronavirus. The Trust has confirmed that there have been no positive tests, but are unable to provide figures on how many have been carried out in the pod. It is believed that each pod will need to be decontaminated each time it is used. A letter from NHS England to trusts across the country said, as part of managing care in emergency departments, trusts are being asked to organise a coronavirus priority assessment pod, which will mean people with symptoms indicative of infection will get quick assessment, while other patients also continue to get appropriate care. The letter said the pod must have a phone which is available 24 hours a day, so worried patients can speak to a specialist response team at any time. There must also be clear signs and posters directing people to the pod so they don't have to come into contact with staff. People will not be allowed to just wander into the pods but must be referred there first by NHS 111. The Hospital Trust has said that the risk to the general public is moderate.
Care to remain at almshouses. Elderly residents living in some of the city's almshouses will not see their care cut after a consultation rejected the changes. St John's Winchester had proposed to remove the registered care that is provided by staff and overnight care, but on Monday it was announced that this will no longer go ahead. The proposals had been put forward as fewer than 10 of its 90 residents were supported by this element of care, and Chief Executive Clive Cook said there was a significant time and cost element involved to Care Quality Commission compliance. But the consultation heard from staff, residents and their families, who put forward their points of view, and concerns had been raised as to how it would affect residents' lives. Mr Cook said, throughout this consultation, we were in constant open communication with all involved in the almshouses and the provision of care. He added, staff and residents are on board with the decision to retain registered care at the almshouses, and we have held staff meetings and an almshouse residents meeting to discuss the decision. While there is a cost and time implication of delivering registered care and CQC compliance, we recognise that to those in the St John's community who receive care, it is a vital part of their being here and is valued highly. It provides a reassuring support network and is one of the benefits of living at St John's. Whilst it can be viewed that the registered care provision has a degree of formality associated with compliance, good relationships and camaraderie significantly outweigh any such formality. Our welfare team carry out many pastoral roles beyond the bounds of registered care, such as helping to organise events, trips, social clubs, well-being initiatives such as yoga and exercise classes, the weekly club at lunch and more. The charity is only one of three almshouse charities in the UK providing registered care. There are said to be 16,000 organisations running almshouses in the country. A proposal was also put forward to remove overnight support following concerns about lone working regarding the team members who carried out the duty. But this will continue as normal, with new cameras installed to protect staff. Mr Cook said, robust CCTV is in place across the sites, with new cameras having recently been installed at the south side to cover even more land, as well as the presence of a private security team who patrol at night. The local PCs and PCSOs pop into the almshouse office regularly
and we have a good relationship with them to raise any concerns we may have. Staff are also undertaking training on loan working, and the maintenance team is identifying any structural security problems.
Here are the death notices. Excuse me. Davis, Marjorie Alice Davis, at Sunrise Care Home. Peskett, Hugh Peskett, peacefully, aged 87. Smith, Norman Thomas Smith, aged 93. Summers, Rona Betty Summers, aged 87. And finally, Wheatley, Elizabeth Wheatley, in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after a long illness, bravely born. And now we'll go to Daphne, please, for Christian comment.
And Christian comment is headed Caring for God's Creation, and it comes from the Reverend Philip Crinks. Once upon a time, there was a scientist who thought her ideas were very special. In fact, she decided she was ready to compete with God. She challenged God to a contest. Which of us do you think can make the better human being? God said, "You're on." He waited. The scientist, after gathering her thoughts, began to bend down and stretch out her arm towards the ground to pick up some dust to make her human being. But God interrupted. "No, no," he said. "You go find your own dust." This expresses, in a joking way, the Christian understanding of creation. Everything in heaven and on earth, seen and unseen, is accounted for by God's creativity. It isn't only human beings whom God has made, forming us from the dust, as dust we are, and to dust we shall return. It is also the dust itself. A national theme this Lent in the Church of England is how we care for God's creation. The Archbishop of Canterbury has recommended Ruth Valerio's book, Saying Yes to Life. Ruth spoke recently at Christ Church in Winchester. Her book considers creation and our care for it, working through each of the 6 days at the beginning of Genesis. On the first day, God says, "Let there be light." We are ever more aware of the way we harness energy sources to shed light and heat. We generate energy that we need, and some that we don't. We conserve energy, but not as well as we should. On the second day, God creates water. We are reminded of the floods, which extreme conditions create. Our seas are polluted. In some places, clean water is scarce. On the third day, God creates land and plants. We remain dependent on farmland and forest and on those who care for them. There are many threats to their continued fruitfulness. On the fourth day, God's creation of stars and seasons begins the annually varying patterns of temperature and rainfall. But here and around the world, these are shifting as the climate changes. On the fifth day, the creatures of sea and sky were created in all their diversity. Yet some species faced extinction due to over-harvesting and loss of habitat. On the sixth day, God made the remaining animals and finally us, human beings, the crown of all his creation. We don't need to make a better human being. God has already made us fearfully and wonderfully well. What we need is to share in the good new life he wants to give us and all his creation, won back for us by the ultimate sacrifice of Christ's death, to share in resurrection life. We gain our share by turning to Christ and choosing his way. By grace we may then live as faithful stewards of all that God has created. The creation waits, St. Paul said, in eager longing for the glorious liberty of the children of God. The creation badly needs our liberty and our care. And that comes from the Reverend Philip Crinks, priest in charge at St. Faith's Parish at St. Cross in Winchester.
And now we have letters to the editor. And we'll go over, please, to David for the first one.
The first one is from Bob Sprague, and it is about potholes. Sir, driving in Hampshire now involves a strong element of pothole spotting and dodging endless destructive holes which wreck tyres, wheels and suspension. And we read that vastly increased numbers are predicted over the next few years. What a joy it is to drive in mainland Europe, in Australia and South Africa, where potholes appear far less prevalent. On a Sunday drive from Hiltingbury to Winchester via Otterbourne, returning via Hursley, I dodged 44 potholes to avoid doing serious damage to expensive low-profile tyres. Last week, my neighbour had a tyre burst and shattered on impact with a pothole in Chandler's Ford. It cost her £150. It could have cost a motorcyclist his or her life. Where are Hampshire County Council's two high-tech pothole-plugging Dragon machines when you need them? I have never seen one, and certainly not in operation. Does Hampshire have a strategic action plan for their round-the-clock use? Potholes, after all, present a serious risk to road safety and human life. And that's from Bob Sprague, Lakewood Road, Chandler's Ford.
This is another letter on potholes from Ian MacDonald. Pothole action. Sir, the letter last week from Mrs. Taylor concerning her husband Viv's accident when hitting a pothole on Jacqueline's Lane should provoke the Hampshire Highways Agency into some more serious and more dedicated action to protect cyclists in the area. There are indeed some appalling examples of unfilled potholes that have languished in dangerous condition for many months. One of the worst examples is the south side carriageway of Tichbourne Down, up to the Cricketers. Another is the road to Cheriton, where potholes big enough to cause cyclists serious damage multiply weekly. Thanks to some pressure from Councillor Lisa Griffiths, there was some minimal action this year to improve the situation, but those repairs have now degraded. Only when those responsible actually cycle these roads instead of just driving around and drawing white marks around holes will the potential threat to cyclists be appreciated. This should be followed up by more efficient and dedicated hole filling. Otherwise, the efforts are devalued. We need to consider safe cycling more seriously. And that's from Ian MacDonald, Carisbrook Close in Alsford.
And now a change of topic with a letter from Simon Lever. Sir, the continuous delay surrounding projects including Station Approach and Silver Hill erode credibility and trust. Businesses that choose Station Approach for offices have been let down by the procrastination of Silver Hill's development and indecision as further confusion impacting upon the city's credibility. Enhancement, effectiveness and overall prosperity of Winchester has repeatedly been put at risk through lack of enterprise and indecision, which businesses, residents and visitors are challenged to comprehend. All this is due to spurious objections articulated by a particular individual seemingly possessing an instinctive negativity. This is indeed a groundhog situation where a series of unwelcome or tedious events appear to be recurring in exactly the same way. From the Chronicle, February 20. Winchester is one of the most desirable locations in which to set up businesses. Businesses generate prosperity, which filters down to those in need and upwards to create a worthy and positive representation of a city which boasts the only monarch afforded the title Great. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
This letter from Eileen Berry is about worsening floods. Sir, I wonder if anyone has noticed the flooding that is happening in many areas. Fromman Road, in Week, has now become a river outside the Methodist Church. It has progressively got worse as the years have gone by. There are many drains in Fromman Road. They are not working. Some of them have collapsed and are obviously not cleaned out regularly. We are building on land that has shrubs, hedgerows and trees which we are able to absorb the rains. We are taking all this out and we are concreting over with many new roads, walls and very small gardens. We have Barton Farm. I've nothing against the development. It's here. It was never going to go away. Therefore, we have to embrace what we couldn't stop. So we've taken the trees and the hedgerows down, and lo and behold, we have taken the habitat of the rodents which are beginning to come into the gardens. With the climate change that we are experiencing, especially rain, of course we are going to have flooding. Where does it all go? Where does the water run away to? If we are not coping with what's already been built for 50 or 60 years because the infrastructure is incapable of taking it into drains, what hope have we got? We are still building very close to areas that have been known to flood, but we don't raise the houses. We do not build houses that can withstand flooding. You would think that in the beginning of the 21st century coming, that we would scientifically understand what is required. We don't seem to have learnt much. That was from Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road in Hairstock.
And on another matter entirely, Buttercross busking. Sir, this is a letter from Graham Petty. Sir, I believe that generally speaking, our high street benefits from the presence of street musicians and entertainers and welcome the contribution they make to the overall ambiance of the high street. However, I've seen countless occasions where visitors to our city have been unable to capture a memorable picture of our famous Buttercross without having to include buskers. Taking a snapshot of family or friends standing next to the landmark is usually impossible without the unwanted inclusion of a busker. Surely a small busker-free zone can be clearly identified and buskers advised accordingly. I've written to various city departments and to our MP Steve Brine, but I'm passed from pillar to post and now hope that this letter in your columns may generate some public support for this reasonable suggestion. And that's from Graham Petty in Woodpeckers Drive, Winchester.
And now a letter from Ingrid Bond on the subject of parking charges. Sir, so disappointed that Winchester City Council wish to hit motorists again. Is your doctor, dentist, optician or bank in town? If so, you had better move to a new practice, because if you are reliant on motor transport to park, it is going to cost you more. Forget browsing in the few shops we have remaining and, after 6 p.m, best factor in the proposed parking charges before you even think about supporting restaurants, cafes and pubs in Winchester. Sunday proposed parking charges will hit all Sunday worship, farmers markets, library services, open from 11 a.m. currently, restaurants, cafes, pubs and casual shoppers, etc. A stroll on Sunday, free from time limits and cost, leads to casual shopping purchases. Introduce charges and I believe you will lose this footfall. And that comes from Ingrid Bond, New Road, Littleton.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836 or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we come to what's on. I have three things I found in the paper for the next few weeks. Gracing the front of the 7 days section of the Chronicle is a picture of John Bowden, folk singer, a local boy who's been in demand for major folk festivals around the UK. He's coming to the Theatre Royal on Monday, March the 9th at 7:30 p.m. So a good evening for all folk fans. And also at the Theatre Royal on Thursday, March the 5th, Opera Up Close will perform Madame Butterfly in English. A tragic story with sublime music. It's wonderful for opera lovers and people new to it. It starts at 7:30 p.m. Ring the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840440 for tickets for both these shows. On Saturday, March the 14th at 7:30 p.m, the Twyford Singers and Players are giving a concert of Handel and Bach at the Hospital of St Cross. Tickets are £15 and can be bought from Jeff Settertree on 01962 712 722, Annie Hibbard on 01962 713 630, or you can get them on the door. And now we to the historical news, starting with 200 years ago, Daphne, please.
Right, 200 years ago, February the 28th, 1820. Two short items. The first one is a little bit mysterious. In the early part of the week, several of the principal members of the present administration had suddenly resigned in consequence of not wishing to comply with the wishes of the king on a delicate matter. So we'll have to imagine what that might be. And the second item, a French chemist, it is stated, has found out a method to convert linen rags into sugar. The detail of such extraordinary findings is not yet known to the wider public.
And then you're going to go on, aren't you?
Yes, I'll go on to 100 years ago, February the 28th, 1920. One of the many things which the army learned during the war was the scientific method of utilising the by-products of soldiers' rations. Prior to 1914, all surplus fat, kitchen and table refuse, bones and waste bread as a rule, were thrown indiscriminately into the swill tub and sold locally by units. And the second item? The periodical visit of Dr. Bernardo's musical boys, which was paid to Winchester on Tuesday evening, was of increased interest on this occasion because of the fact that the Jubilee of the work is being observed.
50 years ago, February the 28th, 1970, this is a good example of plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. South Hampshire is reaching a threshold, a point in time when new forms of urban development and new locations of activity must be explored if the intractable difficulties facing other parts of the country are to be avoided. In this respect, the area presents a challenge and an almost unique opportunity for the second half of the 20th century. These are the views of the South Hampshire planners, expressed in their first interim report, which follows that conclusion of their initial surveys and studies. The challenge, they explain, lies in the inevitability of continued large-scale growth and economic prosperity. The opportunities are to channel that growth and the forces which create change so that the area can continue to be one of the most productive, efficient and pleasant parts of the South Coast. And a second item, a warning that shopping in Winchester would stagnate unless something was done about car parking facilities in the city was given at a meeting of the Winchester Trades Council on Tuesday. There you have it. Reference was made to the proposed hypermarket at Chandler's Ford, which, if it is built, will offer a wide range of shopping facilities and parking spaces for 600 cars. Delegates were discussing a motion calling on the City Council to increase the parking charges at the multi-storey car park, bringing them into line with other city parks and enabling the multi-storey to pay for itself.
From 25 years ago, I think this is a case of plus ça change again, February the 24th, 1995. Hampshire's council taxpayers could face a bill double the £10 to £12 million that has been estimated by the Local Government Commission for possible changes, claims the County Council. Evidence from Cleveland, Avon and the Isle of Wight, where new unitary councils are being set up, is that the cost of the change is far higher than the Commission had estimated. In Cleveland, where four new councils are being created by breaking up the county council area, the new councils say the change will cost close to £30 million, up to twice the £13 to £18 million estimate. Higher costs have also been having to be met, says the county council in Avon, where four new county councils are costing £24 million to establish, rather than the original figure. The Isle of Wight, with a population of only 130,000, now expects the cost of change to be £3 million, three times as much as was first estimated. The Commission is recommending that Portsmouth, Southampton and the New Forest should become unitary authorities and says the cost of setting up these new councils will be £10 to £12 million. If Hampshire follows the same pattern as Cleveland, Avon and the Isle of Wight, the real cost to council taxpayers would be £20 to £24 million, which should never be repaid by savings, say the County Council. A 15-minute meeting of the City Council's Traffic and Engineering Committee on Monday was described as a mind-bending waste of public money by a member of the ruling Liberal Democrat group. A single letter complaining about new car park charges from someone not living in the Winchester district forced council officers to organise the meeting after an undertaking had been given to consider any objections. The meeting had been originally cancelled the previous Monday because no objections had been received by the deadline. But a letter was then discovered in the in-tray of a city council officer away on leave, and the meeting had to be reconvened. Rises in car park charges across Winchester, approved by the previous committee meeting in January, prompted the letter from Stella Horden of Crummock Road, Chandler's Ford, who regularly uses the Worthy Lane car park. Her letter accused the City Council of trying to force commuters into using park and ride with new car park charges. She argued that it was not practicable for those approaching Winchester from the west on the A31 to use the Bar End park and ride car parks because it would involve unnecessarily travelling on the M3. Mrs. Holden commented, "If implemented, the cost of a quarterly season ticket for the Worthy Lane Park will have increased from £50 to £75 in the space of a few months, a 50% increase. With pay increases running at less than 4%, my own increase was 1.75%. This increase is absolutely unreasonable." Oldsford Liberal Democrat Rodney Sabine suggested that only objections from Winchester City Council taxpayers should in future prompt the convening of a full committee meeting. He commented, "I find it unreasonable that this one person can cost the city £300 or £400 in holding this meeting. This whole meeting is a mind-bending waste of public money."
And now we go to the editorial comment, please, David.
Yes, this is in fact about the hospice again. "Help make hospice dream a reality. We have all probably had a loved one or a friend who has been diagnosed with cancer, but for some that close one is given a terminal diagnosis and their world changes. Winchester Hospice has a vision of helping those in need get the best care possible in a setting that feels more like home than a hospital. Since gaining planning permission last year, the team behind the hospice have been working hard, and building work started last month to convert Burrell House on the RHCH site. But now they need the help of the Winchester people. So far, £3.2 million has been raised, but a further £500,000 is needed to make sure that the Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust and the Winchester Hospice fundraising charity can pay for the entire build and equipment. The big push has been launched and more support is needed to help complete the 10-bed hospice. With patients having to go to Andover, Southampton or Basingstoke to get this kind of support, the hospice is so greatly needed in the city. So let's see what we can all do to reach the target."
And then we have first person, please, Jane.
And this is entitled "Symbols of Climate Change" by Joanna Lewis. Hasn't February been challenging? The rail disruption, the terrifying driving conditions, two killer storms. I'm so used to heading out looking like I'm off to join a Norwegian fishing fleet, I often feel like slapping down some live fish and singing a few sea shanties. Shopping lists have gone weird too. Take my Friday one a few weeks ago. Valentine card, chocolate, dog treats, more chocolate, oven cleaner and sandbags. Yes, dear reader, sandbags. Facing Storm Dennis and more surface water streaming down and massing outside the door, it was time for action. Of course, it's nothing compared to the life-changing flooding we're seeing in other parts of the UK. It's not like I'm going to wake up, look out of my bedroom window and see my fridge freezer float by, with the dachshund perched on top. But my new sandbags are a symbol of where we are now, locally, regarding climate change. Where I live, garden grabbing, removal of mature trees, hedges, banks, ponds and greenery has had a measurable negative fallout on biodiversity, natural water retention and air quality. You can see it, hear it, smell it. More widely, the overdevelopment of green space and the density of bills is so endemic there's nowhere for the rain to go or for the birds and animals to decamp to. From my lived experience, I now view all local building sites, big and small, as local zones of extinction. You can spot them by a slashed skyline devoid of trees. Winchester feels like it's at a tipping point in terms of its very character and quality of living. The traffic is terrible, the air pollution chronic, and the building site disruption constant. Add in flash flooding, emergency roadworks and potholes, then it's not surprising long-standing residents say it's changed beyond recognition and horrible outbursts of road rage. I know of families this month living with sewage coming up from the drains strewn across pathways. Hospital waiting lists are so long, people wait 6 months to be treated. We might not be flooded, but we are being dragged down. No further evidence is needed locally that we're at the point of no return in terms of threat to life, from weather, species extinction, pandemics, to the possible end of Marks and Spencer's meal deal. Even the big, arrogant, phallus-swinging bankers are scared. JP Morgan's leaked report warned last week that the human race could cease to exist without massive worldwide action to tackle global warming. The big obstacle to ensuring human survival, as they point out, is the response from our institutions, government and corporate. No one wants to make policy changes that will be unpopular and drastic. Take our council. Its declared climate emergency is meaningless, as the latest Silver Hill plans illustrate. More taxpayers' money spent on consultants to say what the new regime wants. So previously agreed plans for green spaces, environmental enhancement and opening up the underground waterways have been thrown out. And last month they've agreed developers can still build as much as they like as long as they pay for a field of buttercups somewhere at some point. We can surely now expect a council climate emergency plan that will consist of rewilding a few verges, a couple of new water fountains plus a staff away day to Marwell Zoo. The only local organisation saying it's fit for the times is the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust. Under the Amazonian leadership of Debbie Tan, we have bold and reactive policies to stem biodiversity and habitat loss. A council equivalent response would be to temporarily suspend the planning department and to halt all new development on green spaces. In its place should be an environmental recovery unit to reverse the loss of Winchester. And if we don't, well, at least we won't be worrying about sandbags because we'll be living in a desert. Thank you, Joanna Lewis.
And I have to say that our councillor, Jane, reading that, was obviously thinking that some of the statements were not quite accurate.
I couldn't possibly comment.
Right. And now we have Bel Garum, that alternative look at the news. And this says, coronavirus could hit Primark supplies. People who shop in Primark will tell you that there is often a lot of choice. But there are concerns that this could not be the case in the coming months due to the coronavirus. The chain, which has a store in Winchester, has warned it may have a shortage of new stock because of delays caused by the outbreak in China. The chain's owner, Associated British Foods, says there is a risk of supply shortages on some of the retailers' lines later in the year if factory delays continue. However, it said the high street giant, which sources numerous products from China, is well stocked with cover for several months and does not expect any short-term impact as a result of the virus. ABF, the Associated British Foods, said it is assessing plans to mitigate the impact of coronavirus on Primark, including the possibility of increasing production from suppliers in other regions. The FTSE 100 firm also said it has some food operations in China, with its AB Mori, AB Agri and Ovaltine factories in the country operating at reduced capacity due to labour and logistics constraints. The warning came as ABF said half-year sales and operating profit growth are both expected to surpass expectations following strong sales at the high street retailer. The group said Primark sales in the first half of the financial year are 4.2% higher than the same period last year, as it was boosted by recent site expansions. The group said it was on track to post full-year figures in line with expectations on the back of strong group sales and profits for the half year to February the 29th. Associated British Foods said Primark's UK sales are expected to have risen 3% against last year following store expansions and openings. And I'm not quite sure why that gets into Belgarum. I usually think there's going to be a joke at the end of it. But there is one other little thing they say. Surely a marketing opportunity. This is the second item. And there's a picture of the park near the leisure centre with flood barriers put up. The new flood barriers have had their first use to stem rising flows at the end of Park Avenue and by the skate park. Perhaps Belgarum is not the only one to think a commercial opportunity is being missed here. The sections all have the name of the manufacturer and nothing else, just acres of pristine white space. But surely a business could be found to sponsor the panels and have their logo for the world to see. House insurance or water sports spring to mind. Act now, before the taggers and graffiti artists get there first. And we go on to lighting up time, which ends today, Friday the 28th of February, at 6:53 a.m. and begins again at 5:44 p.m. On Wednesday the 4th of March, it ends at 6:42 a.m. and begins again at 5:53 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And I think the new memory sticks have got her name on them, and number perhaps. Now we continue with other items of general news. So over to you, Daphne.
And the first one is headed Garden Entry in Honour of Naturalist. Sparsholt College has teamed up with Gilbert White and the Oates Collections to create an entry for the 2020 RHS Chelsea Garden Show. Entitled The Natural Calendar, and calendar there is spelt with a K, it was designed by the college's multi-medal winning team in celebration of Gilbert White and to mark the tercentenary of his birth. The exhibit will highlight White's life work and accomplishments, observing the natural history. A thatched spinning seat made from an old port barrel is a key element of the design. Originally designed by White to observe the passing environment over long periods, the seat provided protection from wind, a downpour of rain, or burning sunshine. It will be surrounded by a wildflower turf inspired by a natural meadow found at Selborne. James Bolton, Sparshot College student and construction team leader, said, "I am so excited about RHS Chelsea because it's such a prestigious event. As soon as I joined the horticultural course here at Sparshot College, I have been looking forward to it. As a young horticulturalist, it's such a great opportunity to contribute ideas and to put the skills we have learned into practice." Other features will include a ha-ha, an imitation fruit wall originally used at Selborne to ripen fruit, and a melon frame as a nod to the early melon cultivars that White grew in hot beds. Chris Bird, horticultural lecturer at Sparshot, said, "It's been wonderful to see this garden come to life around us to celebrate such an occasion as the tercentenary of Gilbert White's birth in the process. We can't wait to exhibit our work and for visitors to RHS Chelsea to be as inspired by Gilbert White as we are." And that's accompanied by a photograph of the Sparshot students in his house at Selborne, and some of them are dressed in period costumes, holding up extracts from his works, and they've got their hands on the shoulders of the model of Gilbert White, and everyone is looking very happy with themselves.
The next one is called Hundreds Pound Pavements at 10K, and is accompanied by a picture of colourfully dressed runners, most of whom are smiling, so it must have been at the beginning of the race. I was a marshal at the end, and they weren't smiling towards the end. Winchester's most popular annual running event saw 1,744 runners cross the finishing line as it returned on Sunday. High winds and heavy rain threatened to cancel the 10K, now in its 37th year, but event director Kelly Wickens said that organisers pulled off some quick amendments to keep it on. She said, "We faced a number of challenges, however, brilliant teamwork ensured this event could take place. There were so many smiles and achievements made out on the course, it makes us proud to be part of their journey. There were so many amazing stories, including a large group running for their friend fighting cancer and raising over £2,500. The 10K supported the Samaritans and the Courage Foundation.
I have to express an interest in this next article since it's all about my choir, the Wainfleet Singers. Acclaimed local choir announces sponsorship. The Wainfleet Singers have launched their 50th anniversary programme and a sponsorship deal for the year with wealth managers J.M. Finn, who have recently opened offices in Winchester. Choir chairman Howard Natras, announcing the sponsorship deal at a reception with J.M. Finn, said, "We are delighted to announce this sponsorship deal with J.M. Finn at a time when classical music is increasingly squeezed for funds. Their support will enable the choir to pursue its mission of offering performances of the highest musical quality and help us to put on some outstanding concerts in this, our 50th anniversary year. A celebratory gala concert in the cathedral will kick off the anniversary year on March the 28th, with a programme that includes works the choir have sung during their 50-year history, including Parry's I Was Glad and Blessed Pair of Sirens. The gala concert will also see the choir unveil a new commission from world-renowned baritone Roderick Williams, who will also be performing in Vaughan Williams' Five Mystical Songs on the evening. This special event will be accompanied by the London Mozart Players and conducted by the choir's current and two former directors of music, Andrew Lumsden, David Hill and Martin Neary, all of whom will be well known to Winchester's music lovers. The Saturday, March the 28th concert in Winchester Cathedral also happens to be the occasion of conductor Martin Neary's 80th birthday, and the choir will be celebrating. The 50th year will also see performances by the Wainfleet Singers in the Cathedral of Beethoven's grand work, Missa Solemnis, in this 250th year of his birth, and at Christmas, the perennial favourite, Handel's Messiah. Tickets are on sale from the Cathedral box office.
Amazon Prime scam warning. Residents in Hampshire are being advised to be on their guard if they receive an unsolicited call about Amazon Prime. Hampshire County Council Trading Standards Service is advising that the scam starts with an automated telephone call where the victim will hear a recorded message alleging to be from Amazon Prime. A council spokesman said, "The message will advise that a scammer has set up an Amazon Prime account in their name, and if they want to cancel it, they should press 1. The victim will then be connected to the scammer, who pretends to be an Amazon customer service representative. The scammer will tell the victim that their subscription was purchased fraudulently and that they require remote access to the computer to fix a security flaw to prevent this from happening again. The scammer will then attempt to gain remote access, which will give them full view of the victim's personal information, including online banking details." They added, "Remember, any request to gain remote access to a bank account should be treated with extreme caution. If you receive an unsolicited call of this nature, stop and think if an organisation would contact you and request information in this way." And of those phone calls as well. Best thing is just put the phone down.
This is about the Winchester City Mill. The new cafe is the final piece in the jigsaw. A new cafe has opened its doors at Winchester City Mill with the help of one special ingredient, stone ground flour that has been milled on site for over 1,000 years. Benham's Bakehouse, set in the heart of the mill, bakes its own bread, cakes and shortbreads and many other items using some of the 250 kilos of flour the mill produces weekly, just a few metres away. The cafe, opened as part of Real Bread Week, is named after the Benham family, who were the last owners to mill here commercially from 1820 until the early 1900s. It was saved from demolition and rescued by the National Trust in 1928. In 2014, the mill was under threat again, this time due to the floods that swept the country. Thanks to support from visitors and the local community, over £90,000 was raised to help restore the building at a total cost of £300,000. Claire Skinner, Winchester City Mill's manager, said, "This feels like the final piece of the jigsaw. To be able to offer our visitors food that has been freshly baked here using our very own flour, it's quite amazing, and our visitors are loving the experience. The production process is extremely environmentally friendly. 100% of the energy used to drive the machinery comes from the force of the water roaring beneath the mill. It's a fantastic example of living history and how our industrial heritage and centuries-old methods of harnessing power can still play a role in the world today. Winchester City Mill is one of Britain's oldest surviving working water mills that still produces flour today."
Joy as incinerator plans are scrapped. Plans to build a waste-to-energy incinerator near Barton Stacey has announced it will no longer proceed with the project. The US firm Wheelabrator was understood to have been facing increased pressures from campaigning groups and cancelled public meetings earlier this year. Wheelabrator has proposed building the facility, large enough to house Winchester Cathedral twice over, on land just north of the A303 near Barton Stacey. The plans were met with widespread opposition as campaigners branded the proposed facility a monstrosity and a blight on the Test Valley countryside. In a statement last Thursday, Wheelabrator confirmed it was pulling out of the scheme after conducting a strategic review of its opportunities. Commenting on the decision, Vice President Paul Green said, "The UK waste-to-energy market is extremely buoyant, with significant capacity gaps remaining in the residual waste management infrastructure. Wheelabrator is well placed to address this capacity gap and provide sustainable waste management solutions with a number of live projects across the UK." David Wright, chair of Keep Test Valley Beautiful, has led the campaign to stop the incinerator from being built. Speaking shortly after the announcement, he said, "We are delighted and relieved that Wheelabrator have taken the decision to terminate their plans to build a waste-to-energy incinerator in the middle of the Test Valley. We have consistently argued that this is the wrong site for this project, and we are delighted that our concerns have been listened to and acted on, and that our campaign to stop this project has been successful." He then thanked the community's response from getting behind the campaign. Mr. Wright continued, "KTVB has had tremendous support from local residents, environmental groups, local councillors and our regional MPs. The community response objecting to this project has been phenomenal, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank all those who have worked so hard to make the case against this proposal and help bring events to the correct conclusion. It is wonderful news that we can now go forward without the threat of this inappropriate and damaging project hanging over our heads." MP for Winchester Steve Brine, who had previously spoken in Parliament to oppose the plans, echoed the campaign group's joy. He said, "I was delighted to hear this morning that Wheelabrator have decided to cancel this project, which would have been a real blight on this area of the Hampshire countryside, and hopefully that's the last we'll hear of it. Congratulations to all the campaigners involved in raising awareness of the plans."
Spitfire Crash Memorial progresses. A Hampshire hill is one step closer to having a memorial installed remembering three RAF pilots who died 75 years ago. The pilots died in a training accident, killed instantly when their planes collided near Folly Hill, Itchinstoke, on July the 22nd, 1944. Now, after struggling to find out who owned the land, Glenn Gilbertson of the Alsford Historical and Literary Society has been able to submit a planning application for the memorial, which will be in the form of a display board. It is not yet known when Winchester City Council will make a decision. Eyewitness of the crash, Stan Upton, was just 14 years old at the time and was helping to plant vegetables. Overhead, he heard the sound of Merlin engines, and looking up saw pairs of Spitfires manoeuvring hard, their black and white D-Day recognition stripes bright against the sky. Suddenly the sound changed. A sickening crump as three aircraft collided was followed by the scream of two planes plunging into Big Walk Field, while the third, port wing torn off, spun like a sycamore seed into Lousy Crates Field. All three pilots, Flight Lieutenant H.W. Adams, Flight Sergeant J.G.L. Hughes, and Flight Lieutenant B. Lees, were killed.
This is about motocross. The Matterley Basin is going to host a Grand Prix. Matterley Basin, near Winchester, will be celebrating its 10th Grand Prix this year over the weekend of February 29th, March 1st. This will also be the first time in history that the World Motocross Championship will start at the home of motocross, that is, the United Kingdom. The event organiser, Steve Dixon, was born and has lived in Winchester all his life. He is going into his 31st year of World Motocross Championship racing as manager alongside organising this event. He most recently took an Australian, Courtney Duncan, to the Women's World Championship last year, but has many accolades, including taking another local Winchester rider, Max Ansey, to third in the world. The motocross is a staple on the calendar and brings thousands of fans each year from across Europe and even the world to the wonderful Winchester venue.
And this is news in brief. The council disputes housing claims. Winchester civic chiefs have disputed claims by a national housing charity that hundreds of people are living in unsanitary, overcrowded or unsatisfactory housing. The Chronicle last week reported shelter claims about poor quality housing across the UK, including Winchester. It claimed Winchester as 914 households on its waiting list in such conditions, among a total of 1,309 families. A spokesperson for Winchester City Council said, These figures are hugely misleading, and it is not correct to imply that hundreds of people are living in unsanitary accommodation. Whilst there were 914 applicants needing a home for a variety of reasons, anyone found to be living in unsanitary conditions would immediately be offered temporary housing. Whilst average waiting times have reduced in the last 2 years, the demand for social housing continues to outstrip the number of properties available. The Council is addressing this issue by building more affordable homes through our New Homes programme. This has delivered hundreds of new council homes in recent years, with 121 new homes currently in development and plans to build hundreds more in the coming years. The Council says there are a number of reasons why a home could be registered into this category. This could include overcrowded and lacking two bedrooms, overcrowded and lacking one bedroom, inadequate due to children of opposite sex sharing a bedroom where the eldest is over 10 years old, inadequate housing due to lack of facilities, i.e. no regular access to cooking or washing facilities, inadequate housing due to sharing with non-household members, i.e. sharing a kitchen or bathroom, or two children in a social housing flat, or living in private rented accommodation.
Flipping brilliant, City Racing returns. Cheering could be heard throughout the city centre as Winchester Pancake Race returned for its second year. Crowds gathered in the cathedral close to watch teams go head-to-head with frying pan in hand. In the style of a relay race, the first runner would flip the pancake, run to the middle and flip again, dash to the end and pass the pan. Teams included local police officers, councillors, including one of our readers this morning, I think, and the boy choristers. There was even a rival race between Tesco and Sainsbury's staff. The event was organised by Winchester Rotary in partnership with the cathedral, and all proceeds will be shared between the two charities. A spokesperson for the Rotary said, Winchester Rotary wishes to thank IBM's Hursley Laboratory for their generous technical support for this year's pancake race. And that's accompanied by a lovely picture of the Winchester Police Station staff with their mascot, a life-size panda with a policeman's hat on his head holding a frying pan, but I can't see the pancake.
This is entitled Staff Feel They Make a Difference, Survey Says, and is accompanied by a picture of some very happy-looking staff at the Hampshire hospitals who took part in the survey. Staff at the trust which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester say they are trusted to do their jobs and feel their work makes a difference to patients, a new survey has revealed. Employees at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, took part in the NHS National Staff Survey, which saw them answer 85 questions about working for trusts across the country during the autumn. Of those who took part at HHFT, 92.7% of staff reported that they feel trusted to do their job, while 90.7% feel that their role makes a difference to patients. Elsewhere, 81.3% of staff said that they think care of patients is the organisation's top priority, well above the national average of 77.4%, while an increased number of staff said that they would recommend the trust as a place to work than had been the case a year earlier. Catherine Hope McKellen, Director of People, said, I would like to sincerely thank everyone who took part in this survey, the aim of which is to find out the ways in which the Trust can help staff perform at their best. I am delighted that our 85 possible areas, out of 85 possible areas, we improved in over 80%, a result that everyone at Hampshire Hospitals can be proud of. It is very important that every member of the team has the very best programmes and support available so that they can not only deliver fantastic results but enjoy coming into work. The results of this survey helped the executive team to identify areas of possible concern as well as leading to policy changes and investment decisions.
Driver caught speeding at 120 miles per hour on the M3 in a Fiat. A carpenter was caught speeding at 120 miles per hour on the M3 motorway in a 13-year-old Fiat. Police clocked Stephen Foote's five-door Croma as it flashed past their unmarked vehicle, travelling at 50 miles per hour over the M3's 70 miles per hour speed limit. Foote later admitted speeding, but said he was doing so in order to test for a possible fault in his car's turbocharger. Now the 40-year-old has been given a six-week driving ban and a £422 fine. Doesn't sound much. During Foote's sentencing at Southampton Magistrates Court on Monday, the court heard how Foote was driving his Fiat on the M3 near Winchester on June the 26th last year, when he was spotted by officers in an unmarked police car. Prosecutor Julie Macy said police saw the car whiz by at a speed one experienced traffic officer estimated to be in the region of 130 miles an hour. Police activated their sirens and followed the vehicle, clocking it travelling at a speed of 120 miles an hour. Mitigating, Michael McGee said Foote's driving was absolutely disgraceful and extremely dangerous, but that his client was extremely ashamed of his actions. He said it was a lapse in judgment. He was road testing a potentially defective turbocharger in his car. Mr. McGee added that Foote wanted to test for the possible fault before he took the vehicle on a family holiday to France. He urged magistrates to limit the length of any potential driving ban handed to Foote due to the impact it would have on his work as a carpenter and joiner. Foote of Coxford Road, Southampton, was given a 42-day driving ban and fined £422. He was also ordered to pay court costs of £85 and a victim surcharge of £42. Commenting on the case, a spokesperson for the Motoring Association, the AA, said, "Tearing down the motorway at 120 miles an hour takes the chance of survival in a crash to near zero. Worse still, the victims are likely to involve innocent people who need the protection of the law."
Young patients find comfort thanks to charities' donations. Babies in the neonatal unit at Royal Hampshire County Hospital will have a more comfortable stay thanks to a donation from a volunteer organisation. The unit received six colourful incubator covers from Project Linus UK, which provides homemade quilts, blankets and incubator covers for young children who are sick, disabled, disadvantaged or distressed. Incubator covers are designed to protect babies from bright lights and sounds, encourage sleep, and to create a homely atmosphere during their stay. Sharon Stone, clinical matron for the neonatal unit, said, "The covers are incredibly valuable as they help to support development care, protecting babies in incubators from light and noise during their stay with us, and the parents love the colours and fun materials. We can't thank Norma and Project Linus UK enough for all of the hard work and effort they put in to create the covers." Norma Goodwin, Winchester volunteer coordinator for Project Linus UK, visited the unit to make the donation. She said, "It was a great joy to be able to create the new incubator covers for the unit. Each cover takes over 11 hours to make, but seeing the reaction when the donation was brought in made it all worthwhile." And there's a lovely photograph of Norma and the staff holding these beautiful incubator covers, quilted and covered in lovely nursery fabric with teddy bears and toys. They really do look lovely.
This is entitled "Camerata Concert Raises Funds for Church Rebuild," and the church in question is St Peter's in Ropley. A charity concert has raised more than £2,000 to help restore a Hampshire church that was ravaged by fire. The Winchester Camerata were joined by violinist Adrian Adlam, a former colleague of mine, at St John's in Alresford earlier this month. Around £2,300 was raised at the event, which will go towards the restoration of St Peter's in Ropley. The church was gutted in 2014 when a fire engulfed the main body.
This is about a festival for the city's youngsters. A popular event for youngsters celebrated its fifth year with a move to the Discovery Centre, seeing dozens of children enjoying a packed programme of activities. Cowfest, that's Children of Winchester Festival, offered free workshops and activities including arts and crafts, music, drama, Zumba, yoga, mindfulness, puppetry, circus skills and Lego construction. Volunteers from communities across the city helped out on the day with Winchester University students, the Winchester Embroiderers Guild, Winnell Rock School and Hampshire Cultural Trust all lending a hand. The event is organised by Winchester Sport, Art and Leisure Trust, Winchester SALT. The charity's chief executive, Emma Back, said, "We're really pleased with how the festival went at its new venue. It was very busy, which made for a great atmosphere. We're grateful to Winchester Beard, Waitrose and Hampshire County Council for their support and to all the fantastic activity providers and volunteers. Cowfest couldn't happen without them." And there's a lovely picture of a lad here with a homemade pirate's eye mask and hook hand, obviously having a great time at the Discovery Centre.
Staff celebrates as zoo named in Top Employers. A wildlife park has been named Top Employer, it has been revealed. Marwell Wildlife, which owns and operates Marwell Zoo near Coldon Common, is celebrating being named in the top 100 UK best not-for-profit organisations to work for in the Sunday Times Best Companies List 2020. Marwell Wildlife is the only zoo featured in its category, and it ranked 49th place overall. The Best Companies List is an annual ranking and is worked out by measuring the UK's happiest and most motivated workforces. Marwell Wildlife employs 290 members of staff, ranging from animal keepers, landscape and catering staff, to conservation biologists and scientists in the UK and abroad. This is the third time Marwell Wildlife has entered and been featured in the top 100 UK best not-for-profit organisations category, having previously been listed in 2018 and 2016. Jo Deller, HR Director at Marwell Wildlife, said, "To be featured once again in the top 100 best not-for-profit organisations list is a wonderful acknowledgement and a true testament to Marwell's brand values, to be warm, welcoming, wise and contemporary. We understand and value the power of true employee engagement and the positive benefits this brings to both our people and our business. And we place employee well-being at the centre of our organisation's culture." It has been revealed that Marwell's well-being initiatives include financially supported healthcare, an on-site occupational health advisor, a workplace choir, Pilates and yoga classes. Joe added, "Our somewhat quirky and well-received HR well-being wheelbarrow regularly hand-delivers important messages and communications to all of our people, full of treats, useful gadgets and a reminder of the employee assistance programme that is available to all." Marwell's position was announced at a ceremony in London on February the 19th, following an independent national survey which measures employee engagement.
Radicalised inmate attacked prison officers. A radicalised inmate at Winchester Prison launched an attack after luring officers into his cell and lunging at them with an improvised weapon, it has been claimed. The Times newspaper has reported that police are investigating an incident involving convicted killer General Imiru and prison guards on Thursday, February the 13th, but officials have so far been unable to confirm the circumstances. No staff was injured, and it is understood the incident is not currently being investigated as terror-related. Imuru had been segregated in the prison over concerns of violent behaviour towards prison staff, the PA news agency understands. It is thought prison officers attended his cell in the segregation unit to check on his condition after he was seen lying on the floor, but a struggle took place after he was found to be conscious. A weapon was found after the incident during a search of the cell. The 20-year-old, also known by the surname Webster, was the first person to be convicted of an acid attack killing and was jailed for 17 years in 2018. He pleaded guilty to the manslaughter of Joanne Rand, a 47-year-old carer for dementia patients. The innocent bystander had been visiting her daughter's grave when she was hit with the high-strength sulfuric acid which Imuru had armed himself with and was knocked out of his hand during a row with another man nearby. The mother of three had 5% burns on her body and died 11 days later from multiple organ failure after contracting septicemia. According to the Times, Imuru has started showing a growing interest in extremism and has tried to forge relationships with jihadist prisoners. A prison service spokesman said, "Police are investigating an incident at HMP Winchester on February 13th. Violence against our hard-working staff will not be tolerated and those responsible will face tough punishment, including more time behind bars." Imuru has no previous terror convictions but is believed to have been radicalised after converting to Islam in jail. Speaking on Radio 4's World at One programme, Ian Atchison, who led an independent review of Islamist extremism behind bars in 2016, said violent extremism was clearly not under control inside prisons and presents a lethal threat both inside and outside jails.
On a lighter note, Beer and Cider Festival to return. Winchester Beer and Cider Festival returns on March the 13th and 14th, celebrating the apple and the grain. This year there will be four sessions over Friday and Saturday at the City Guildhall, its home since its return in 2011. Each year almost 3,000 people attend, and in 2020 there will be over 70 real ale and key cake beers, plus over 30 ciders, perries and around 30 bottled beers to keep them all refreshed. This year we'll also see the launch of a gin and wine bar for those who prefer those tipples. Music will be provided by Rough Cut on the Friday evening, Platford Common on the Saturday afternoon and The Score that evening. A tutored tasting will be held by beer expert Adrian Tierney-Jones on the Friday afternoon, where attendees can learn how to develop their appreciation of real ale. The CAMRA, Campaign for Real Ale Festival, is organised by over 100 local volunteers who give their time to help introduce people to the delights of real ale and cider and to raise money for local good causes. Each year, thousands of pounds are raised for charity. And in 2020, Winchester Night Shelter will be supported and Winchester Wellbeing will again run the cloakroom to raise funds. For more information, go to winchesterbeerfestival.org.uk.
Spring into action appeal. The Sutton Scotney-based hospice Naomi House and Jack's Place has launched their very first virtual sporting event. The hospice has devised Spring into Action, a running, cycling or swimming event that anyone can complete with family, friends, colleagues or sporting club in the comfort of their own surroundings in their own time. The virtual event will be running from March the 1st to the 31st, and to take part people need to register for just £10 on the Naomi House and Jack's Place website. The next step is to decide the sport they want to do and set their personal mileage goal. The events team at the charity have suggested these potential goals. Run 31 miles in 31 days. Cycle 300 miles in a month, or swim 5 miles in March. These are not compulsory distances. Participants can complete as many or as little miles as they wish. Charlotte Patrick, events fundraiser for the hospice charity, said, "We know that scheduled events aren't for everyone, and that for a lot of our supporters, a 5K fun run just isn't enough. So we listened and created Spring Into Action to try to appeal to as many potential supporters as possible. It's so easy to get involved. However you choose to reach your goal, know that you'll be helping to make a difference to the seriously ill children and young adults in our care. To register to take part in the event, go to www.naomihouse.org.uk/spring-into-action.
Train services fully resumed, which will probably come as somewhat limited comfort to the users of South West trains. Services have now fully resumed following the train derailment at Eastleigh Station almost a month ago. This comes after six 52-ton wagons derailed from the track on January the 28th due to an infrastructure fault, which caused the line between Southampton and Basingstoke to be blocked. While temporary track was built to allow some services to resume, many trains from London Waterloo were unable to stop at Eastleigh following the incident, and some commuters were forced to take rail replacement buses. As previously reported, all Network Rail services between Southampton and Winchester were cancelled this weekend while workers replaced the damaged set of points. Mark Killick, Route Director for Network Rail Wessex, said, "I'm sorry to passengers, my apologies to passengers who have experienced disruption to services over the last few weeks. Given that many trains from London Waterloo are currently unable to call at Eastleigh following the derailment, we needed to find a solution to replace the damaged points as soon as possible. The derailment caused significant damage to the tracks at Eastleigh Station, which caused travel chaos for passengers across the region, as they faced long delays and cancellations for almost a month. As previously stated by Network Rail, the incident was caused by an infrastructure fault after a small number of fastenings gave way. This led to track spread, meaning the two rails impacted were no longer the correct distances apart. Since the incident, Network Rail has carried out enhanced precautionary inspections of all similar fastenings across the Wessex route."
Sir Optimists support firefighters. The ladies of the Sir Optimist Club of Winchester were delighted to welcome Kerry James of the Firefighters Charity. The club is keen to support local charities, and this is one supported by the Mayor, Eleanor Bell. The Mayor was also in attendance and introduced Kerry and also indicated why she had chosen this charity during her year of office. She said, "On looking through the charities supported over the last 20 years, there was no mention of the Firefighters Charity." Kerry explained that they offer many tailored programmes to firefighters, both serving and retired, offering rehabilitation, recuperation and respite, with nursing services given by those who fully understand the job, many who have been through similar circumstances. Disasters can be fire, flood, aircraft crashes, rail incidents, road traffic collisions, all of which entail a view of human suffering and serious injury and death. It may seem that individuals cope with this on a day-to-day basis, but stories of depression, suicide, self-harm and mental health can appear without warning. The Firefighters Charity can provide what is needed to help, be it physical or mental well-being. Kerry is based in Eastleigh and covers the whole of Hampshire. The charity has treatment centres in Devon and Cumbria. The charity has no government funding and needs £9 million per annum.
City Centre Street closed for works. A Winchester City Centre Street near the Cathedral is closed to allow for works to pavements by the County Council. Work started on footway improvements in St Swithin Street on Monday, February the 24th, and will last for 10 weeks. The works will be undertaken in two phases. Phase 1, Southgate Street to St Thomas Street, started on Monday, February the 24th, and is expected to take 7 to 8 weeks. St Swithin Street will be closed to through traffic between 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. each weekday and open at all other times, This will restrict access into the cathedral close. The road will be closed using signs and barriers, and Hampshire Highways staff will be located at either end of the closure to move barriers for access-only purposes. The workforce will also be able to advise pedestrians where it is safe to walk while the works are underway. Phase 2, St Thomas Street to Simmons Street, due to start on Thursday, April the 9th and take 2 to 3 weeks. St Swithin Street will again be closed between 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. each weekday and open all other times. To maintain vehicular access for small vehicles only, the one-way restrictions on St Thomas' Street, Minster Lane and Simmons Street will be relaxed to allow traffic to run in each direction. Temporary traffic lights will be erected and several parking bays will be suspended. Between 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m, no goods vehicles will be permitted in St Swithin Street. All deliveries and collections should be arranged to take place outside of these working hours. Councillor Rob Humby, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment at the County Council, said, "Looking after Hampshire's extensive highway network, for all those who use it by foot, cycle or vehicle, is one of our top concerns. These footway works are part of our planned maintenance programme, Operation Resilience, which is a long-term strategy designed to ensure Hampshire's highways and footway network is resilient to the impact of severe weather by using our resources as efficiently and effectively as possible. I would like to reassure local residents that these essential works have been carefully planned and we will do all we can to minimise disturbance and disruption."
Man, 57, died at home in flat fire. A Winchester man died in a flat fire which was likely caused by an electric heater being too close to a sofa, an inquest heard. Stephen Vere, 57, of Fell House in Whiteshute Lane, was pronounced dead at his first floor home on November the 5th. A post-mortem report by Dr. Adnan Al-Badri found Mr. Vere had 150 times the therapeutic level of promethazine in his system. However, such a high reading is likely due to post-mortem redistribution, which can heighten the concentration of a drug after death. Robin Furness, an investigation officer at Hampshire Fire and Rescue, said, "It's likely that Stephen was asleep in his bedroom when the fire started in the lounge. He probably would have been awoken by the fire alarm. Because he was not used to dealing with a fire, his response would have been to fight it, which meant he would have inhaled a lot of smoke whilst already drowsy." Mr. Furness concluded the fire was, on the balance of probabilities, caused by an electric heater being placed too close to a sofa. As previously reported, emergency services were sent to the St. Cross property at around 3:20 p.m. after a neighbour reported seeing smoke and flames. Winchester Coroner's Court heard that Mr. Vere often slept in the afternoon due to health issues. He suffered from depression and had a long history of lower back pain and was on a waiting list to undergo spinal fusion surgery. A statement from his daughter, Sarah Jane, said, "He was a very positive man. The last time I spoke to him, he sounded happy. He had enjoyed riding his restored motorcycle, playing golf and took pleasure in photography. Waiting for surgery, he struggled to move around and that made it difficult for him to get in and out of the car. Everyone who knew him misses him dearly," added a statement from the wider family who were present at the inquest. "The whole family misses him terribly in such a tragic time, but we would like to thank the police, the fire service and all other witnesses who have been very compassionate. Thank you for all of your efforts." Area Coroner Sam Marsh concluded, accidental death.
And on a lighter note, dog walk. Some 50 walkers with and without dogs will be taking to the fields and lanes around Itchen Abbas to raise funds for a family support charity. The event for Home Start Winchester will take place in March, and Nina the Labrador will be returning along with her owners Mel and Paul Bliss of Gay Dog Boarding Kennels, sponsors of the annual event. Paul said, "It's always a great opportunity to meet old friends and enjoy a walk in the spring sunshine. This is our fourth year of sponsoring the walk, and we are very happy to be supporting Home Start and the work that the charity does with families who are struggling to cope. By the way, dogs are not compulsory. You can just come for the exercise or even just come for lunch. The dog walk takes place on Thursday, March the 12th and starts at Itchen Abbas Village Hall. Arrival is 10:30 a.m. and departure 10:45 a.m, whatever the weather. There will be two walks of different lengths and a ploughman's lunch will be ready to welcome walkers on their return with a menu of four homemade soups to choose from. Tickets at £10 can be booked online with a 70p booking fee at www.ticketsource.co.uk/homestartwinchesterdistricts or email info@homestartwinchester.org.uk or by calling 01962 851177.
And that's the end of the extracts for this week. Thanks to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
David Baldwin.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye and have a good week. And please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. Thank you.